Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. And before I even say anything about today's show, I want to congratulate you, Tim, on your win.
Thank you,
City
Lynn.
Council.
Thanks.
Way to go.
Yeah, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, everyone did so much work, really, in that campaign, and it was a great campaign.
Yeah, it was interesting how it was portrayed as not being an issue-driven campaign or not having friction, but I think it was issue-driven. But yes, there was no friction.
Right.
It was a very friendly campaign, which I think in a town like this it should be.
Absolutely. And by issue, you mean it brought up topics that people are concerned about.
Exactly.
Yeah. Way to go. So, well, our first guest in today in the program is someone who anyone who rides a bike in Park City knows. It's the 20-year Jan's Bike Shop manager who's now embarking on a new adventure. It's Todd Henneman. He's soon to debut his new store, Storm Cycles, at Kemble Junction.
And then Julia Geisler, she's the executive director of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance. She's joining us to talk about the Real Rock 8 film screening tomorrow at the Jim Santee Auditorium.
And finally, Bob Berg, he's the author of the book Adversaries Into Allies, Win People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion. And this is really a great message. We realize that it's sold in the business aisle of the bookstore, but it's kind of a self-help book.
Relationship book.
Yeah, it's really a great message. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back.
I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Tune in to Cool Science Radio Thursday at 9 a.m.
Whatever happened to cold fusion? We'll find out with the Lawrence Livermore Laboratories about current research.
The definitive story of Amazon.com, one of the most successful companies in the world, and of its driven, brilliant founder, Jeff Bezos. It's the Everything Store with Brad Stone.
That's Cool Science Radio Thursday at 9 a.m.
Only in Park City. Only on KPCW.
My name is Mike Leventhal. On November 8th, our community will come together for 24 hours of giving at livepcgivepc.org. Our trail systems, Kimball Art Museum, the open spaces, and KPCW are all the reasons we are the luckiest people in the world to call Park City our home. So on Friday, November 8th, I'll live PC and give PC by supporting the organizations that support our lives.
Presented by Park City Community Foundation, Summit County's Community Foundation, a nonprofit organization.
Promontory proudly supports KPCW. Promontory is a private community with amenities including Pete Dye and Jack Nicklaus golf courses, private Deer Valley Lodge, and the Shed featuring bowling, art studio, movie theater, and panoramic views of all three ski resorts. Private tours available daily, 333 Club or PromontoryClub.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, loyal, devoted, and hardworking people often end up working for the same company for years while always thinking about striking out on their own and maybe never doing it. But our next guest, Todd Henneman, is doing just that as he leaves his 24-year career at Jan's, 20 of those as bike shop manager at Jan's, and he's opening a new bike store called Storm Cycles at Kemble Junction. He's now joining us to talk about that new endeavor, and welcome to you, Todd.
Thank you, Lynn.
So I hope that intro sort of described it. It may not, but here's your opportunity to tell us all about it. I mean, you have been at Jan's for as long as I remember Jan's being there, which probably isn't. It's probably not the same thing, right?
No, it's been there longer than I've been there, but it has been a long time. I made a career change in 1989 after I got into cycling and was pretty possessed by it. Had some friends up here that rode. Tried to get my foot in the door at Jan's that summer of 89 and quickly found out there wasn't much spot for a cycling mechanic or salesperson, and was instructed by the manager at the time, Tom Noker, that get my foot in the door in the winter side of things, in ski sales, and then maybe there would be an opportunity the following summer. So that's what I did and was able to get on that winter. So my first year at Jan's was actually in ski sales.
How things have changed.
Yes.
I mean, that's amazing
yeah.
to be told that there's no room or need in a town like this for somebody who whose area of expertise, interest, and passion lies with cycling. Can you believe that? I mean, not,
no.
I mean, it fits right in with, you know, 21 years ago, there were 25 miles of trail, and now we've got over 400 of single-track trails, so there's your mountain biking component. And then the road biking has come on so strong.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always amazed when I think back when I started the first summer after that winter, the first summer that I was at Jan's, there was one full-time mechanic.
Wow.
And then I was part-time, and Tom Noker was the manager.
And what about the rest of town? Did Cole have anything going on with bicycles? Did White Pine at that time have anything happening with bikes?
White Pine did. White Pine Touring at that time was on Main Street and had a bike shop specializing in mountain. And really, that was it. I couldn't even work full-time. It was only part-time that first summer. And the truth is, the next summer was almost the same. So the explosion I've seen in cycling has been amazing.
And what does that compare to now? How does that contrast with being the bike manager at Jan's? How many people employed related to bikes and in your bike shop?
Well, to put it in perspective, I guess from that time till now, I have the shop employs anywhere from 5 to 6 mechanics during the season.
Full-time mechanic?
Full-time, and also some part-time help. And then during the winter, we have 1 to 2 full-time guys in the shop as well.
It's just part of being a mountain biking and biking mecca, really.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the evolution of the sport as you see it. I mean, there is just something about bicycles. You know, people who love bikes, they love all kinds of bikes. They, you know, they have their repertoire of the kind of bikes that they like to keep in their garage. And as you've seen it kind of evolve over the years, what stands out for you? I mean, no doubt we're a mountain biking mecca, but what trends have you seen over the years? Or
there's so many, Lynn. It's I always watch seems like the pendulum always swings between road and mountain, and road will make huge strides and get popular, and then the pendulum swings back and mountain starts to come back around. But I think for our community, the with the amount of trails that we've put in, the mountain bike has just exploded, because the companies that build these mountain bikes have their technology to gobble up the terrain and climb the terrain, and has just expanded incredibly. And so the bikes are so capable now. I look back at some of my first mountain bikes versus what I'm riding now, and it's amazing.
Not even the same thing. I know. How long would you say, I mean, you know, you keep a road bike a lot longer than you do a mountain bike because the technology just doesn't change that much. Is that right? Or
that's correct to some degree. The you know, technology does change in the road. Things get lighter, mm-hmm. more aerodynamic. But a road bike, think about it, doesn't take nearly the abuse of a mountain bike. Mountain bike, you're in all the elements of dirt and mud and dust and sand. And so the durability is a lot shorter on a mountain bike. But aerodynamics and weight are probably the most the technology-driven things on the road.
Todd, what about that third component of biking in a community like this? And that's that alternate mode of transportation. I know I see you riding your bike everywhere. I see John Concannon. I don't think he owns a car. He rides his bike with his backpack everywhere. And there are a few other people who have already adopted the bicycle as their primary means of transportation in our town. Is that something you see growing, the cruiser bikes, the town bikes?
Great. That's a great point, Tim, and one I forgot. That's another trend I've really seen evolving in the last, 5 to 6 years, is advocacy for safer routes to ride your bike, transportation Also, not always having to jump in your car. A lot of the bike manufacturers are actually putting that on the forefront right now of their technology.
Well, you see that with the bike programs in some of the big urban areas, the bike share, even Salt Lake has one. And then the electric assist or electric boost bikes that I've ridden one, which is incredible. Yeah. It's so much fun, that little turbo charge that you get from that thing. Yeah. But that's a lot of fun to cruise around town on.
Yeah. No, I think it's fantastic where that's headed. One of the drawbacks here is winter gets so we can have some hard winters, so it makes it a little tough to ride your bike year round. But there's 3 or 4 months where maybe it's really difficult. But other than that, you can get around. And as we've continued to jump on board with bike paths, more routes. I see that a huge growth potential.
Is that going to be part of your business with your Storm Cycles, your new venture?
Yeah, for sure. We want to accommodate that transportation or commuting, that area of the cycling industry as well.
So let's talk about Storm Cycles. You know, we're counting up 4 bike shops, I believe, in town in Park City, and really not too much at Kimball Junction. I suppose that was a big part of your decision to open a bike store out there. We have a Mountain Velo that does bike fits out there, Tim Bucknowski, and then he has kind of works along with Max Testa with the CompuTrainer class. That's something at the Junction. You are going to be where? Next to Park City Coffee Roaster?
Yeah, that's correct. Right next. We actually share a wall. We have a common wall, but that's right where the location will be.
Okay. And, you know, huge population out there and many, you know, hundreds, thousands of people who ride bikes.
Yeah,
is that the place?
You're exactly right. I mean, that was a huge decision. Or one of the things that helped me make my decision was the majority of population for Park City is out there. A lot of those people commute to Salt Lake. We thought it really made sense for them to have a place where they could get their bike worked on, pick up odds and ends, accessories, buy a bike, whatever, and not have to drive into town to do that. A lot of those people don't really drive into town anyway.
Right.
So
better capture the business from Salt Lake,
correct.
Really,
yeah,
than
for
sure. Okay.
We feel like it a huge opportunity for people that they could drop their bike off for repair. Go to work, pick it up on the way home, you know, with as many people that live in that area.
Right. So you're going to be carrying a couple of lines. Why don't you tell us about those?
Yeah, for the mountain bike specific line, we'll have a brand called Pivot, which is an up-and-coming brand. They launched several years ago. They're a fairly young company in the bike world.
I have a new Pivot, Todd, and I refer to it as my new lover.
Ah, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
You so too can own a new lover.
So you like the bike.
I love that bike.
I see. Yeah. The owner of the company, his name is Chris Kokalis, and he's been involved in the bike industry for a long time.
Didn't he originate another line that's a popular line?
Yeah, you may have heard of Titus.
Titus, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which he started years ago. And after that went through a couple different buyouts and went away, he launched Pivot and has some real leading technology on those bikes.
I need all the leading technology I can get.
Don't we all? So great. So Pivot for mountain bikes and for road bikes?
Road bikes, we're in the process of pursuing Cannondale, which I'm sure you've heard of. They want, with what's going on in Park City, with the wide range of cycling growing in all these categories, they're hoping for a bigger presence in Park City. So we have a huge opportunity to work with them, being a full line, and to cover all those categories we just talked about. So very well known on the road, in the road world, for road bikes. And then they cover the whole thing. They have commuting bikes, comfort bikes, we have a lot of people in this town that like to just jump on a bike that's comfortable, ride the bike path, maybe ride from town to Redstone. Those bikes, they have those. They also have mountain. The other thing is a lot of families here with parents trying to introduce their children to the cycling side of things. So they have a great kids line as well. So
okay.
Todd, what about the personal side of this decision? Was this at your stage of life and the 24 years at Jan's? And I know certain things had to come into place and match for you to be able to do this, but is this an easy step for you, or is this a giant step in your career or from a personal perspective?
Well, and that's a great question, Tim. In my world, it was a giant step.
This is a giant step.
Yeah,
well, congratulations for taking a giant step.
Huge decision for me. And 24 years, it was difficult, pretty emotional, but just felt like it's something I've always wanted to do. I mean, probably for the last 10 or 15 years, I've thought about it. But I'm a fairly conservative guy. I really take my time doing things and think about things, and it just took the right time and for things to kind of fall in place where it was like, I really want to do this now. This might be my last move to finish out my cycling career, or really my next step in the cycling world to maybe where I would finish.
Well, you know, you have such name recognition in this community, and you have such support. I think I can't imagine that people wouldn't support you and continue to support you with your passion and your step and what you want to do. I mean, your endeavor, it's fabulous, and congratulations for taking that step. I'm thrilled for you.
Well, thank you very much. You're exactly right. I've been overwhelmed with the response, the things that people have said to me, and I couldn't be happier. People are, they seem to be really stoked about it. And I'm a passionate guy about cycling. I've been doing it a lot of years, and it's got a really deep place in my heart and everything. So,
yeah. Well, we're excited for you, obviously. And, I want to ask you just a few quick questions about, I want to say not only are you iconic in, you know, this bike world, but you also are an active racer and very fast, I might add. But you're also very involved in the Nordic ski world. And I'm wondering if you're going to bring that into the bike shop at all.
We're planning on that. We're not opening until February of 14. So that'll be next year. But in the winter, yeah, that's my expertise as well, is Nordic. So that's what I want to pursue in the winter.
Right.
Have that Nordic side of things. And as you well know, the Nordic stuff is trails, and the amount of people doing it has exploded here as well.
Absolutely.
So I think we have a really a great opportunity for to capture that market out at the Junction as well.
That's right. I remember years ago, there was a Nordic shop out there at the Junction. And it just, you know, it was like an idea that was before its time sort of thing.
Exactly. It was a little before the amazing growth that we had here and the explosion of the trails. And he was mostly doing a lot of mail order business, but he did okay for that time. But
right.
Things have really grown in that market.
Boy, haven't they ever. How many square feet in your shop? Is it going to be big, small?
I think it seems big to me for
until it's filled with bikes.
Yeah, it's 3,200 square feet.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good size. So about how many bikes do you plan on having in there on the showroom floor? Is it going to be, you know, like you walk in and you feel like there's a ton of retail stuff? Or
yeah, we're going to have not only bikes. I would imagine when we open, you know, we have to be somewhat conservative just to see how it goes, but we'll probably have somewhere in the area of 50 bikes. And then those will continue to come in as we get more into summer, but we'll have parts, accessories, apparel, helmets, and then again, a full service repair shop.
Okay, great. Well, Todd Henneman, best of luck in your new venture, and thanks for coming on today. We'll look for you in February out at the Junction next to the Park City Coffee Roaster.
All right. Thank you very much.
That's Todd Henneman with Storm Cycles, former Jan's bike shop manager for 20 years, embarking on something new. It's a good little challenge for all of us. In fact, many of us in this room are embarking on something new. You two. Two out of three of us. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be back in just a moment with Julia Geisler, Executive Director of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, Vice President and Branch Manager at Grand Valley Bank, Frontier Branch in Park City, a proud supporter of KPCW. Our team can help you with all of your banking needs, from checking and savings accounts to business lending. We have Heber Valley Bank in Midway and Heber, and Grand Valley Bank Frontier Branch in Park City. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
All Seasons Adventures is back to sponsor the programming of Fun Friday for another year. All Seasons Adventures is a provider of outdoor adventures in Summit and Wasatch counties. We can be reached at 435-649-9619 or allseasonsadventures.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. The Salt Lake Climbers Alliance raises funds to protect trailheads near climbing areas in both the Uintas and the Cottonwood Canyons, among other things that we're going to hear about in just a moment. Part of their fundraising effort is to bring the Real Rock film to Park City, it seems like at least once a year. And Executive Director Julia Geisler is now joining us to talk about tomorrow evening's screening of the film Real Rock 8 is this one at the Jim Santee Auditorium beginning at 7 p.m. And good morning to you, Julia.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. I'm always fascinated by this Real Rock thing. Am I right? Do they come up with a new one every year or how does it go?
Yeah, so this is the third year actually we've shown the Real Rock in Park City, and it's a film of four short climbing adventure films, and it's a story for each film. So it's not just watching people climb. It's a story wrapped up in four different film segments, and it starts at 7:30.
Oh, 7:30. Okay.
But doors open at 6:30.
Okay.
I remember you convinced me 2 years ago to come to the first showing, and you told me it's not a climbing film, Tim. You'll really enjoy it because it's much more, and you were absolutely right. It was a fabulous film. I missed last year because I was out of town, but the first year that you showed it, it was phenomenal. It's a great outdoor movie.
It is great. And just so you know, there is a lot of adult content and language in it, so recommended 18 or older.
Well, maybe that's why I liked it.
It's good.
Well, so we went on to the trailer this morning, and there was a lot of footage of people falling. I was cringing. I was doing that gut wrench thing. Is there a lot of fall? Have you seen the movie?
It's really exciting. Let's just say that. Yeah. And it's from all over the world. So
it's beautiful.
It's really cool to bring this to Park City. And it's exciting because we have two new bouldering gyms going in Park City. So climbing is going to become more prevalent here. One is called Alpenfit out here in town where the old Blockbuster used to be. And the other one is The Mine, and that's at Kimball Junction. So both opening this month.
Okay, great. So we just talked to Todd Henneman, who's opening a bike shop out at the Junction next to the coffee roaster. And I think in my mind, I was picturing
it's called The Mine.
The Mine.
And it's actually next to Park City Coffee Roaster as well, next to the post office in Molly Blooms in between there.
Okay, very good. So lots of recreation opportunity at the Junction coming up. So how big is the bouldering thing in the climbing world?
You know,
the climbing gym thing.
The climbing gym thing is also very big, and it's growing. As you can see, two new gyms going in Salt Lake. So, you know, that's one of the missions of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance, since we're an advocacy group, is to make a responsible transition from indoor to outdoor climbing with all these new people getting on plastic inside, bringing them outside and teaching them ethics of how to use the crag. We call a crag a climbing area. How to use the trails, and it's completely different climbing outside in terms of safety. So,
yeah, do you find that becomes even a bigger mission because the education component is so big? People aren't sort of growing up with this outdoor orientation,
mentorship for sure. Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, that's one of the goals of the organization. We threw the Kragan Classic. I was on KPCW over the summer talking about that. And that was, you know, it's an event focused on just that, educating and a responsible transition from the gym to the crag. So That's one of our missions.
Do you also look for new places to develop as climbing areas? Is it like mountain trails, going out and developing trails? You go out and develop, you know, trailheads or areas for people to explore and climb on.
So we don't necessarily develop new climbing areas. That being said, climbing areas that have been developed that are getting used, we work with land managers to make the trails better and more sustainable. And we work on replacing the hardware that is already out there. So climbers go out and they put up their routes and they put out hardware and that stuff gets worn. And so we work on replacing the anchors and replacing the bolts, the bad bolts.
Is that a safety issue for the climbers?
Of course. If somebody has an accident, that's an access issue.
And have all the climbing areas been discovered? So is there undiscovered terrain out there that you could theoretically bring into the portfolio?
Definitely undiscovered terrain, you know, especially in the Uintas. There's always new climbing being developed here in the Wasatch. And there's a lot of climbing in the Wasatch. It's chock full in the Cottonwood Canyons, the Uintas, American Fork. It's kind of like the summer activity in these canyons.
Mm-hmm. So if you were to talk someone into trying out a climbing gym for the first time, I know you're a yoga instructor as well. So talk a little bit about, you know, the benefits of climbing from a health perspective and a fitness perspective.
Well, I'll quote Charlie Sturgis, first of all, because he taught me
to
climb.
Oh, we love Charlie Sturgis quotes.
No
we're
good
a little
can
scared.
Come of this.
So, you know, Charlie always says that climbing is like yoga and chess on the rock. So if you're going to, you know, really use your body, be very mindful of where you are in space. You're in the vertical world. It's exciting. There's a lot of safety that you have to be heads up about. You're in the moment. And it's a great cross training for all the sports we do here. It helps you lengthen your muscles, but also build strength and flexibility. It's really fun. It's great for teens.
That's great. Okay, so tomorrow night, doors open at 6:30, show starts at 7:30, and you always have, I've won some great things in your raffle, or is it a raffle?
I think we have to call it a giveaway.
A giveaway, oh yeah.
Opportunity drawing.
There we go.
Opportunity drawing, but we have a lot of great sponsors. This whole film is sponsored by Petzl, so we'll have a lot of great gear from them, but also Goal Zero, the Mind Bouldering Gym, and the new Alpen Fit Bouldering Gym are putting in some day passes, Silver Bean Coffee, Lululemon here in Park City, the yoga component, White Pine Touring and Backcountry.com are some of the sponsors that will have gear for that opportunity drawing that you can get tickets for. And to get tickets for the film, if you get them today or early tomorrow morning, it's $10. And you can get that at saltlakeclimbers.org. Or you can buy them at the door for $15. And that's, again, 6:30 p.m. The doors will open.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Anything else?
Other than, you know, if you want to be more involved with the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance, a good way to do that is to join. We have a $35 membership, and it's a joint membership with the Access Fund. So you protect both local and national climbing for your joint membership. And you can join on saltlakeclimbers.org. And I'll also just throw a pitch for mountain trails, for Live PC, Give PC, because we're all non-motorized recreationists here supporting one another for that effort. So.
Okay, Julia Geisler, Executive Director of Salt Lake Climbers Alliance. Thanks for joining us today. And again, show starts at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow at the Jim Santee Auditorium. That's Thursday, and it's The Real Rock 8, a great film. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back.
On November 8th, the community will come together with one goal in mind, to help fund our area nonprofits. Each dollar raised by KPCW will be matched by a generous grant from the Promontory Foundation. Make your donation count. All funding KPCW receives during Live PC, Give PC will go directly back to the area nonprofits by providing free public service announcements and discounted underwriting rates. Nowhere else can you find this exclusive service to the area nonprofits. Only in Park City, only on KPCW.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we make promises all the time. We just don't keep them.
Is any of the show going to air?
None. None.
I'm Peter Sagal. Tune in to hear things that none of us ever imagined saying on the radio. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Heard on KPCW Saturday morning at 9, thanks to 350 Main and the Spur Bar and Grill.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, the wise people were asked, who is mighty? And they were answered, those who can control their own emotions and make an enemy of a friend. make an enemy a friend.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that first one.
Well, in the best-selling book, The Go-Giver, our next guest, Bob Berg, revolutionizes the way we think about success via one very simple lesson, shifting your focus from getting to giving, constantly and consistently providing values to others. And now Bob Berg is back with a new book offering deeper insight into what it means to be truly influential and providing powerful strategies for mastering the art of winning people over. His new book is Adversaries into Allies, Win People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion. And Bob Berg, welcome to The Mountain Life. Bob Berg, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Well, thank you. It's so great to be with you.
Well, you know, your book jumped out at me for, I'm not sure exactly why. It was something about the title, you know, Winning People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion. And it just feels like a kinder, gentler sort of way to approach people, you know, maybe a more modern day way.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to think it is, a kinder and gentler way. And yet, just as effective, actually more effective than trying to bully or coerce people. Because when you do that, and when you want to get what you want to get, which is very human, and there's nothing wrong with that, but when you do that through coercion, through manipulation, what happens is there are times you might get instantaneous results, and by the way, you might not, because people will resist you. But even when you do get what you want immediately, that person at best is going to do no more than exactly what they've agreed to, and at worst, they might even sabotage the process completely, consciously or unconsciously. So what you want to elicit from people is commitment to your idea or commitment to the appropriate action, as opposed to a type of compliance which is not long-lasting and, frankly, makes you feel kind of yucky. That's a technical term, by the way, yucky.
There we go.
Hey, Bob, if I'm walking down the aisle of a bookstore, or if I'm on Amazon looking for your book, what category am I going to find it under?
Well, because my publisher is a portfolio, wonderful people, and they are a business publisher, it will most likely be in the business category. It might be under personal development, most likely business, and it is, and yet it sort of goes across the board to anyone, regardless of the situation.
Well, that's what I was thinking. As I was reading along, I was thinking, this is framed as a business book, but everything you talk about, all the themes, all the examples have to do with relationships between people.
You know, I agree with you. That is exactly what it's about. You hit the nail on the head. And success in any area of life, whether we're talking financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, relational, the principles are all the same. It's, can you focus on providing value to another human being? And when it comes to persuasion or influence, can you tie together what you want with what's going to be in the best interest of the other person? You know, Dale Carnegie, who was just such a wonderful author and wrote the classic How to Win Friends and Influence People, made what I thought was a very profound point. He said, ultimately, people will do things for their reasons, not for our reasons. And I thought that's very honest.
So, Bob, are you finding that through your work, and this is a I don't know what number book you've written, but you've written previous books and had great success with them. And during your writing and your exploring, your research, and everything that you've drawn from to come to the point of writing these books, are you finding that there are certain fundamental truths that you can then frame as a business framework or as a personal development framework? But are there certain fundamental truths that you have hit upon?
You know, I think there are. I think in a sense, to the degree that we can take our focus off of ourselves, move from what I call an I focus or a me focus to an other focus.
Is that the ego?
Pardon me?
Is that the ego part?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we do talk about ego in the book, and the ego is certainly a driver for us. And I don't happen to think that I don't necessarily associate the ego with being something bad. It's only bad when it controls the person. when we're in control of our own ego, we can do terrific things that serve both ourselves and serve others. But certainly the ego is a driver. And so when we've got to understand that when we're in a potentially difficult interpersonal transaction with someone, their ego will come into play. And so we've got to be able to respect that person's ego. You know, the story is told, and I tell the story in Adversaries and to Allies, of the black tie affair, the dinner party in Washington, D.C. One of the guests was and this is not a true story, by the way. It's I don't think it is anyway, but it makes a point. And that is one of the attendees was a U.S. senator who was dismayed because when he got to his table setting, he saw there was just one pat of butter with his roll. And he very dismissively said to the waiter, young man, bring me another pat of butter. Well, the waiter was taken aback, but wasn't in a position of power that he could actually say anything. So he simply said, "Oh, I'm sorry, there's only one pat of butter to a customer," to which the senator snapped back, "Well, I don't care, I want another pat of butter, bring me one right now." The waiter said, "I'm sorry, it orders from the kitchen, there's just one pat to a guest," to which the senator replied, "You know who I am, I happen to be the senior senator from the state of New Jersey," to which the young waiter replied, "Do you know who I am? I happen to be the guy who controls the butter." And you know what that really says is that we think it's the senator who had the big ego, and he did, but it was also the waiter. And people will make decisions based on their ego. And so that's why we need to remember that, and we need to speak to people with tact and empathy. We need to communicate with tact and empathy if we want to bring out the best in that other person.
It's so funny, the whole interplay of egos. I mean, ego is so important, and even our own ego as we're dealing with others' egos, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You have a chapter called Sometimes It's Good to Let Them See You Sweat, and it's so funny because I was racking my brain trying to remember someone else that we spoke to on a similar subject about being vulnerable and about just being kind. And I found it here. You referenced Dr. Adam Grant.
Yes.
And with his book Give and Take, and it was so funny about being vulnerable and just honest and kind of exposing yourself, which is really compromising your ego in a way, isn't it?
It is, and that's why it takes confidence to be able to do that. And the story in the book was about my fourth grade teacher, Miss Cadlick. And she was facing this group of, you know, potential fourth grade hoodlums, right? And she, the first thing she said, you know, you're a little kid, so you look at it as an authority figure. And she was a much older woman, of course, 23 years old. So, you know, how could she worry about us? But the first thing she said was, you know, children, I've got to tell you, I just graduated college. This is my first day of teaching, and I am scared to death right now. And we were just totally taken aback. How could someone like her be scared of us? But what she did was she made us her partners in her mm-hmm. challenge. She shared this with us, and you know, we fell in love with her right away, and for good reason. She was a wonderful, wonderful person. And but really, you know, we were going to make sure that she wasn't going to have an issue because we just, you know, she shared with us. She let us into her world.
So you were just on board with her. You were going to help her along the way.
Yes, that's an amazing
story that you remember, you know, you've taken throughout your life, really.
Oh, that taught me such a wonderful lesson right there. Exactly. And, you know, people will say, well, but won't people take advantage? No, not usually. You know, there's always people out there. It's a big world. There's all sorts of people. And, you know, and I say in the book, too, by the way, it's always situational. Don't take these so literally that it's counterproductive. There's times when it's absolutely best to not let them see you sweat. But not usually. Usually, you're going to really win people over more when they know you're being you.
Bob, you just mentioned that it takes a great deal of self-confidence to be able to expose yourself and be vulnerable. And your book is full of systems and tools to help us turn adversaries into allies. But what about that step before? What about developing that confidence? And it seems to me like it almost is a prerequisite for the systems and tools that you're offering. Only a person in a certain place or a certain phase of life with a certain amount of self-confidence can actually incorporate these tools and effectively use them.
That's a great point. And that's why I began with the actual principles themselves and brought people into situations, real world examples, real life examples that people have been in, currently go through, or probably will at one time or another, so that they can actually build on their small successes. What this book is absolutely designed to do is give people the confidence as they go along to know they can do this same thing, because it's very intuitive. I mean, what I want people at the end of this book, what I want them to say to themselves is, I already know this stuff. And, you know, when they feel like that, now they're in a position, now they're in a real context where they can take this and apply it immediately.
So, Bob, I have to ask you one thing that jumped out at me. You mentioned that there's a successful way to talk your way out of a ticket. Would you please tell me about that? I think it could come in handy.
Yeah, and it's actually, it has everything to do, again, with respect and consideration. I actually learned this back years ago from a state trooper. And he had said that if you're ever pulled over for, let's say, for speeding, and again, if you're driving dangerously, recklessly, it's not going to work, nor should it. But I'm talking about when we're, you know, a little heavy in the pedal or something where we didn't come to a complete, you know, something in which it wasn't, it's not crime number one, but it, you know, it's worthy of a ticket. And so the first thing you do is you pull over, obviously, as safely as you can, as soon as you can, over to the side of the road. Now, if it's at night, what you do is you turn your inside light on in the car and just place your hands on the 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock positions on the wheel and stay perfectly still. What we're doing here is we're respecting the police officer because we know that in their job, and it's a very dangerous job, and they do a great job of protecting and serving, what we're doing is we're saying, hey, you know, I'm empathetic to your situation, and I know that the most dangerous time for you is when you approach a car. So we're letting them know we're not a danger to them. Then what we want to do is obviously be polite and respectful when they say, you know, do you realize you were going, you know, whatever miles an hour and so. You don't lie. You don't make it. You simply say, yes, I do, and I apologize. Now, that right there might be enough. But if it's not, what you can say is, you know, if you feel that there's a chance you're going to get that ticket, you could say, officer, again, I'm not making any excuse, only apologizing. This isn't something I usually do. If there's any chance I could possibly get away with a warning this time, I'd really appreciate it. And then pause a few seconds and gauge the energy, the response. And then what you can say is what I call the 8 key words, and that is, if you can't do it, I'll definitely understand. And what you've done is you've given him or her the out, you've respected them, you've made them feel comfortable with you, and I can tell you first from firsthand experience, unfortunately, but also from the many who have taken this advice and utilized it, it absolutely works. Every time, no. Most of the time, absolutely.
I have to say, I was thinking along as you were describing the process, and I've done that, and I'm thinking in my mind, it just hasn't ever worked for me. And then you get to the point of asking for the warning. I have never done that. I have never asked for the warning.
Yes,
and I have never then followed up with the, and if you can't do that, I will understand. I have never done that either. So
that's what I call the out or the back door. And that's a very, that's something we talk about in the book.
Right.
That as human beings, we want to know that we have choices. And so when we give someone a way out, a back door, when they're not forced into a situation or feeling pressured, we're showing them respect. You know, Berg's law of the out or back door simply says, the bigger the out or back door you give someone to take, the less they'll feel the need to take it.
Yeah. It's so funny, the example of being pulled over and talking your way out of a ticket. It's just a metaphor for so much in life. It's funny, and it, of course, makes me think of the times that I've been pulled over. And I have a friend that every time he gets pulled over, it's like he goes into I am going to belittle you, officer, mode, and tell you what a worthless human you are. And he gets a ticket every time, and has always said to me, oh, you just get out of it because you're a woman.
No, not true at all. And what he does, he goes into reactive mode rather than responsive mode. He also goes into what we call the default response. You know, sort of a computer that defaults to 10-point Helvetica every time, you know, when you open it. He goes into that same response mode every time. He's doing the same thing, and he's going to get the same exact results.
Well, Bob, don't you think also some of it has to do with the fact, you know, that response that, oh, you get out because you're a woman? There is an element of truth, and it's not a gender truth. It's simply that women present differently, and they're more in touch with some of these elements that you are highlighting. I mean, there's sort of a feminine aspect to some of that, how you treat people with empathy, with compassion. it comes more naturally, I think, to certain people, and a lot of times they're women.
You know, Tim, it's funny. I don't see it as gender-based. I see it more as developing an emotional intelligence, if you will. Mm. But I sort of personally don't really think it's a masculine or feminine thing. I think we all have the ability to be polite, be respectful, honor another person, you know, honor, work within the framework of another human being's ego. So, you know, but that's just me. Who, you know, I'm not necessarily right just because I'm saying it.
No, I agree with you completely. I think we all have the capability, but that emotional intelligence, in my experience, tends to be more often found, a higher emotional IQ amongst women. And I think that's just a cultural thing, but it certainly, you know, obviously is something we can all strive for.
Sure.
Now, one of the things, Bob, that I mean, you just keep coming back to this is really essentially about respecting other people. And we know this, like you say, we read your book and go, I know that. I know that. And so I'm sitting here wondering, well, you know, why don't we do it? We all fall prey to, you know, losing, not using tact, not respecting others. And I think it comes back to maybe, you know, insecurity or lack of confidence and defensiveness. I think about when I feel most insecure, I get defensive.
I think that's a great point. So in one aspect, it's being aware of these things. When we talk about the five principles, you know, control your own emotions. It starts there every single time. The sages said, who is mighty? That person who can control their own emotions and make of a potential enemy a friend. So important. It's where it starts every time. Understanding the clash of belief systems. You know, this is big. It's understanding that we come from our own set of belief systems based on upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television, movies, popular culture, and so does the other person, and neither of us are even aware that our entire operating systems are run by beliefs that we had very little to do with forming. I mean, that's a biggie. We have to acknowledge their ego, as you were talking about earlier. We need to then set the proper frame and then, of course, communicate with tact and empathy. So what I've tried to do with adversaries and to allies is provide the tools, okay, so that they have the tools, and then through the stories, which are fun and entertaining stories, and we can see ourselves in the stories, be able to actually see where when the next time something like this comes up, we know what to do, and that's where confidence comes in.
Mm-hmm. Bob, these five principles that you lay out, if you find yourself completely up against a wall where you can't either control your own emotions or you can't acknowledge their ego, do you need to – I mean, obviously, you kind of have to get that part of this under control or managed before you can move on to the tools.
Yes, and that's why I have an exercise in there, how to be able to do that so that you're not caught short. See, what happens sometimes, Tim, and you bring up a great point, is the surprise factor comes into play. Mm. So what if someone just, you know, verbally attacks you, and it's like that surprise? So what I do is show a way that you can actually practice and rehearse the potential situation coming up. So just like an astronaut who simulates, 100 or 1,000 missions in his or her, not just mine, but actually on the machinery, on the simulation equipment before they ever go up into space. So by the time they actually are in flight, they've already been there and done that. And so that's a tool that I provide in the book. For people to be able to do that. I think that's a wonderful point you bring up. You've got to be able to have that context for success when it actually happens.
And do you find there are certain situations where people might struggle with controlling their emotions in one context, but then in another, say in just a relationship, a man and woman in a relationship, there might be an issue, but take those same people and put them in a business role, and all of a sudden they're calm, they're controlled, and it's like they're a master of controlling their emotion. Does that happen?
It does indeed, and that's simply because we all have triggers. You know, we all have these, as we say, nobody can make you angry, nobody can make you upset, but you know what they can do? They can push your emotional hot buttons. Mm-hmm. And that's just a matter of those things in our past and our experience that cause us to feel that way, sure.
Bob, I'm wondering about people who look for disagreement. It seems like we all have those people in our lives. And why is that?
What a great question. In a sense, it's really a sense of their ego and control. Yeah. Because when, it's the person who says that the sky is blue, and then the person immediately looks for that one part where it's not blue and says, oh, yeah, but what about here? Okay. Yeah. You know, that's their way of getting attention. That's their way of controlling the situation. That's their way of being part of the conversation. Where instead, if they really want to be a positive part of the conversation and increase their influence and have people wanting to be their ally rather than adversary, they may not, by the way, believe the sky is blue, and that's fine. This is not something where we're saying you have to just agree with people. Not at all. But what you can say is, I enjoyed hearing your point of view. What I'm finding is there's a part here where it's boom, and then you make your point. But it's not so much in this case what you say. I mean, there's nothing wrong with disagreeing with someone. We can all learn from one another. That's one of the wonderful aspects of life. But it's how you do it. And do you look to disagree? And if you're looking specifically to disagree, then you need to ask yourself, why? Am I doing it because I want to be part of a solution? Or am I doing it to get attention? Do I get some kind of feeling by making someone else wrong that it makes me more right? And these are those sort of things that we've got to be conscious of ourselves. And then once we are, again, now we're in that position to communicate with people in a way that's so much better received, and it causes them to what I call know, like, and trust us.
Mm. Bob, is adversaries into allies a progression or an evolution from the go-giver?
A great question. I would say that it is sort of the social skills application of law number three from the go-giver, which was the law of influence. So it wasn't so much progression as much as an explanation.
and that's great. And it took a book to explain that one concept.
Yeah, thank you. And this was really a labor of love for me, because this is something where so something that I had to, genuinely work on myself. But I was very blessed in that my dad, I've come from just great parents, just wonderful, loving people. And my dad has really been a person who just sort of intuitively has always been so great with people and always understood how to genuinely make people feel good about themselves and bring out the best in people. And I really feel as though I'm standing on the shoulder of a giant in communicating this message. So really, this was a true labor of love for me.
And your book is out currently, and I'm assuming it has wide distribution and people can find it in their local bookstores?
Yes, and they can also download, if they'd like, a free chapter to see if they like the essence of it or where it's going. Before they buy it, they can go to adversariesintoallies.com.
It's a great book, and I love that it's in the business section, but it reads kind of like a self-help book, and it feels like maybe the new genre of how we're dealing with every kind of relationship that we have.
Well, I appreciate that, and that's really my goal. My goal is to sort of spread the word, if you will, and provide the tools that you can attain personal satisfaction, absolutely. And while you do that, you can genuinely help other people to feel good about themselves as well. And when we can do that, everybody wins, and it creates a bigger pie for everyone.
Right. Our guest is Bob Berg. Thanks, Bob, so much for joining us. And the book is Adversaries into Allies, Win People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion. Have a great day, Bob.
Lynn and Tim, thank you both so much.
And this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I want to thank our underwriters today.
Grand Valley Bank, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Utah Prudential Real Estate, Park Meadows Country Club, Park City Clinic, San Francisco Design, and Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa.
And want to remind everyone to tune in to Cool Science Radio tomorrow, 9 a.m. We'll be talking about Jeff Bezos and Amazon.com. You're listening to KPCW 91.9 FM, Park City.